number one.
From the number one college town in the Big 12.
Big 12.
We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State fan, this is the Purple Project Podcast on this February 17th, 2021. Eddie Greer III, a.k.a. EG3. You guys know what it is, the Purple Project Podcast, all about Kansas State athletics. Of course, I graduated from K-State a few years ago, back in 2013. That's about 8 years ago. And my co-host, Alex Aiden, he'll be on here, and shortly graduated a year after I did. Hope I got that right. But anyways, here before we get right on into the episode, of course, you can find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, Radio.com, and even Amazon Music. If you have that in your home and you can tell Alexa to play the Purple Project Podcast, and she will do so. And we're finally on the... at least here in Manhattan, Kansas, on the back end of this Arctic chill for the last, it seems like forever since we've been in this, but finally, greener grass, at least weather-wise anyways, here in Manhattan, Kansas. Speaking of my co-host Alex, let's go ahead and bring him on right now, out there hanging out in the beautiful weather in San Diego, California. Alex, what's going on?
Not much. You were close, Eddie. You were close. You said 1 year after you. It was two. I graduated in 2015.
That's so right. Close enough.
You were close enough. You were close enough. So 6 years out for me. Good to talk to you, Eddie. And you mentioned the Arctic weather. Just a quick story here. It's not really a story. It's just more I guess kind of a story. Anyway. Prior to living here in San Diego, as you know, and many know, and I brought this up on the show before, so I'm sure people heard it on the podcast, but prior to this, I worked in Texas, Wichita Falls, Texas, to be exact, as a reporter, and at KUZ-TV, and as we know, right now is not a great time for Texas. They've gotten hit as hard as anybody with the winter weather, the really bad temperatures. A lot of people don't have power. A lot of people don't have water.
Yeah.
A lot of different things going on in Texas. And, I just have to say, Eddie, first off, I hope everyone in Texas is doing well, because it is a mess in Texas. But kudos to, I'm going to give the media a quick shout out there in Texas, everywhere in Texas. Because at my old station, the reporters that are there, and I don't think I know any of the, I think all the reporters who are there now came after I left. There's still some anchors there that were there when I was there, but I don't think any reporters specifically are there that were there when I left. But look on their talent. They're having to stay night, sleep, on cots, on air mattresses at the station. They're working 24/7, working 14-hour days to bring 24/7 coverage on what's going on. And I tell you what, Eddie, that just drains the heck out of you mentally and physically to keep going through that grind. And been doing it since Sunday, and they're still doing it on Wednesday. So, man, hopefully they can grind through all the media out there covering what's going on in Texas and all over the country. Hopefully people are staying warm, Eddie. I saw this at one point this week. There were 185 million people in the United States that woke up to temperatures below zero. Just unbelievable wind chill that was below zero. Not actual temperatures, but the real field temperatures was below zero.
Yeah.
That's over half the population, Eddie. So I just hope people are staying warm during this Arctic blast that is just blasting through 2/3 of the of the country. You're right. We're out here in San Diego, and we're not feeling, you know, we're not feeling it. It's mid-60s out here, which is actually cold for here, but it's just mid-60s out here right now. But I will say this about the Arctic blast. It's probably a good segue, but there was clearly an Arctic blast on K-State basketball tonight, Eddie. I don't mean to make humor on Arctic blast, but I mean, I think that K-State might have been feeling the weather outside the Grambling Coliseum tonight, because that was ugly. But good news for us is we can break down some football a little bit later, and the schedule reveal, which kudos to the football team for their heads up video for their schedule reveal. That was pretty clever. I liked it. I liked the way that they revealed that in that 2.5 minute video. So the football team and the social media team there at K-State and the video content team did a fantastic job with that. That was a good little idea. So I look forward to break that down. But yeah, we got a lot in today's show.
Yeah. And before we talk about the Arctic blast, which that is for basketball for both men and women, as they drop to their opponents today, 0-2 of the day. But yeah, I ran a 5K race last weekend in Kansas City, and yeah, it was like -4 or whatever when we got started running. So it was definitely like later in the race, it definitely was harder to breathe for sure. I know one of my friends was supposed to do she was supposed to do the 10K and kind of called it smartly. So she wasn't feeling it. A lot of people dropped out of that 10K and just went ahead and did the 5K anyway. So, but yeah, the weather played a big factor in that. Yeah, you're not used to, I'm definitely not used to running in that cold of weather. So you can call me crazy, or you can call me stupid, or you can call me whatever. But hey, I mean, main thing, we all got it out of there. We finished, we crossed the finish line, and that was the main important thing there. So yeah, but the cold weather,
I'll never forget it, Eddie. It's a story you'll tell forever now.
Yep, I will. That is the coldest race. That moved to the top of the list. The coldest race I've ever run. That probably will be the coldest race I ever run. So, yeah, I'm going to let to tell that one to Emma when she's older. But, yeah, but switching gears. Yeah, Kate, Alex, she brought it up. Arctic blast moving through K-State. And we just got done. Well, I didn't get to watch the game. I listened to actually most of the game, was in and out of this game on the radio. Yeah. With the 23 ranked KU coming into Bramlage. Of course, the last time these two teams met, K-State was quote unquote intimidated of Allen Fieldhouse, and it showed. And Much didn't change in Bramlage as KU takes care of K-State 59-41 in an ugly game, really, for both teams, really, and mainly for K-State in this one, as they continue to lose. The longest losing streak continues for K-State. Only for K-State, Alex, in the first half, 17 points to KU's 26. Yeah, that's pretty bad. And then, of course, the KU just pulled away in the second half of this game. And then I believe it was Wyatt Thompson who mentioned the three-point shooting. And we talked about the terrible three-point shooting for K-State throughout the year. And before Luke Kasupi made his three, they're like 0-16 from downtown.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's not going to cut it. And 3 of 24, Alex, from downtown, 12%.
You got it.
12%, only 31% from the field. Yeah, this is not going to get it done. And the Jack on High K-State continues now. Obviously, you know, over the weekend, they lost to Oklahoma State, but they almost rallied on the road from down 20 points. And yeah, you can't, even though they did that, Alex, you can't fall behind that big. That's just too much to ask for a young ball club like Kansas. And here tonight, there's poor shooting all around. You got your leading highest score here. Actually, when I'm looking down this box score, right, I just pulled up. Dejuan Gordon, the only person in double digits. 12 points. Only one rebound for him on the night for him. De'Veon Bratt. This starting lineup. Whew. 12 points. I'm counting it. 14, 16 points from the starters. And Dejuan Gordon almost outscored the starters by 4 points here. That's just not going to cut it. You need better production from everybody. And at this point, and I referred this, I believe, on the weekend edition podcast that I talked about, you need to be getting better and not worse. And it seems to me like I thought that, you know, okay, with this performance by Oklahoma State, there are no moral victories, but they play Oklahoma State tough in the second half of the game. If I, okay, they can have some momentum coming home, right? Well, you know, it's back to the old K-State that we've seen over and over this year. So you're not, this type of production against your in-state rival is just not going to cut it at home. And Sylvan Miguel, no points from the starting lineup tonight in 18 minutes play. 0-5 from the field. That's not going to cut it at all. So, yeah, pretty much an ugly performance all the way around. And K-State now 1-13 in conference play. Now, Alex, you say you watched the game. So, I didn't watch much of this game. I listened to the majority of it. And, yeah, what are your just overall thoughts about this game tonight?
Well, my overall thoughts were pretty much what Kel Sharbat tweeted after the game, which is what I shared with you before we went on, was that he said, K-State loses to Katie 59-41, let's never speak of this again. And I'm like, pretty much. Yeah, that was pretty pathetic. It was one of those things, Eddie, it felt a lot like the first game in Lawrence, and what I mean by that is it was a game where K-State kept it close going into the second half. They kept it to single digits going into the second half, but it wasn't because of what K-State was doing. It was more of KU just missing shots and KU not being a great offensive team this year. KU is a good basketball team. There's no denying that, but they're not like the KU of old, and they're not like some of these other Big 12 teams that can really just score a lot of points. That's really not their game. And so, to me, it felt more like, man, K-State's kind of pulling KU down to their level a little bit, or the K-State play up to the level of KU. And then KU eventually, you know, gets it going, and they go on a run, and then they separate. You know, that's what they did both games. They did in the first game. They finally kicked it to gear, went into run the second half, and it was able to get a 23-point win there in Lawrence. And then back in Manhattan, K-State was able to keep it close longer. But then KU goes on that run. I think it was, right around the 10-minute to 5-minute mark, KU really made that push to separate and get it out of reach for K-State, pull away there. So, you mentioned the shooting. It was just horrific. And I heard a lot of people talking about, and it's something they talked a lot about in the broadcast today, and it was how great KU's defense was. And KU did play very good defensively. They played very good defensively, taking no credit away from them. They're one of the best defensive teams in the Big 12. They can defend. They may not be one of the best scoring teams in the Big 12 this year, but they can defend. They always can defend under Bill Self. And they can always score when they need to score under Bill Self, because he's so good at scheming things up. K-State just missed shots. I mean, and while it's no shot at KU, and K-State got a lot of open looks and just didn't hit them. Of the, 24 threes that they shot, I would say at least a dozen of them were good, clean looks. They were not contested, you know, good ball movement, or they're coming off the screen, or KU's just saying, you're not hitting them, so we're not going to guard you. And KU was doing that. KU was like, you know what, we're packing it down low, we're going to let you shoot threes, and later in the game, K-State had a bunch of guys open for three because KU just said you can't make them. So, but you are shooting pretty well in the 2-point range. So, we're just going to pack it low and force you to make threes in case they couldn't make threes. So, K-State missed a lot of shots. K-State had a lot of stupid turnovers. Stepping on the line too many times, throwing the ball away under a basket, or not securing a rebound, or just a lot of dumb mental errors in the game too. I didn't watch the game, Eddie, and think, man, K-State doesn't want to be there. It didn't feel like that. K-State seemed really engaged defensively. They seemed to be moving around. It didn't seem like they were flat. Against Oklahoma State in the first half, they kind of felt like they were a little flat. After those two games against Texas Tech and Texas, where they really played probably two of their stronger games of the year, they just kind of felt flat in the first half against Oklahoma State. And then they got it going in the second half, but it was just too late. You can't come back when you get down like that on the road. Against KU, I didn't get that feeling. I didn't get the feeling that K-State was flat. They just couldn't hit anything. They couldn't hit any shots. And they did the best they could to hang around. But it just, they just made dumb mistakes and couldn't hit shots. And you mentioned Dejron Gordon. He's the only reason they were in the game for as long as they were. Because Dejron Gordon, who we didn't even know if he was going to play, coming into the day, and he didn't start because of his injury. Dejron Gordon was all over the court, Eddie. He was diving on floor for loose balls. He was in the middle of blowing up plays defensively. He, on offense, was the one that really got K-State going, especially early on when KU got up like 10-2, and then KU got up 14-6 or something. He got up early, and Dejron was the one that came off the bench and helped kickstart K-State, and I believe Dejron had 8 of K-State's first 15 points in the game. And so he was carrying them, really, and kept them in that first half. And they only had 17 points in the first half, but you looked at Dejron had half of it. So without him, they wouldn't even been in that game. Mike McGurl couldn't shoot, couldn't hit the broadside of the bar. I keep watching Luke Kazuki, and I think if he can't hit threes, I don't know why he's on the court. But okay, so he just couldn't get any good thing going. He did have that three late that broke the 0-15 or 0-16. It hit the front iron, Eddie, bounced up, and then went in. That's how K-State's first three goes in, of course. So it was a weird shot. And of course, Eddie, those two threes that were made late are made by Carlton Lingard and Joe Petrakis. they came in off the bench with a minute left, and then they drained two threes, of course, because it was,
garbage time.
and then, just why not? But it was ugly. Dejron looked great. Nigel did not play well. Selton McGill looked completely lost. Antonio Gordon, he didn't have a very good game. He had his flashes. By the way, he had a great game against Oklahoma State with 15 and 14. I do think that Antonio Gordon really has a future if he ends up staying at K-State, but still wasn't his night. And then Dejon Bradford, he just never got really going either. He was only 1-2 for the field, he did get some rebounds, but... And so did Antonio Gordon, but look, Eddie, it's not hard to get rebounds when you shoot 30%. I mean, it's gonna be a lot of balls to rebound. So
yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I'd assume your rebound. They kept talking about, wow, K-State's got a lot of offensive rebounds in this game. Well, I mean, every ball is bouncing off the rim, so they should have it. They had 12. They had 12 to KU 6. But I'm thinking, well, yeah, of course they're gonna have a bunch of offensive rebounds. They're shooting 30%. So, but it was just ugly, Eddie. It was ugly. They couldn't hit the broadside of the barn. And, after having those two games, you mentioned it. K-State had those two games where you're feeling better. You see improvement. You see them getting better against Texas Tech and Texas. They looked good in both those games. They were really competitive in both those games. Just about damn near beat Texas in Bramlage. And then they go to Oklahoma State, and then they come play KU, and they get to Oklahoma State. It just laid an egg in the first half. They showed up in the second half, but it was just too late. And then against KU, you couldn't hit the broadside of the bar. And so there's no doubt that it was a step back these last two games. When you were hoping that K-State could build. Last week on the show, Eddie, we said, let's see if K-State can build on these two games. Let's see if they can go do it on the road against Oklahoma State. And they couldn't really. They didn't really. It was a seven-point game, but not really. And then, what can they do against KU? I mean, K-State's going to have the motivation there. They did have the motivation, but they played one of their... I'm not going to say one of their worst games, because they played a lot of bad games, but it was not a good game for them. I'll put it that way. So, after the last time they played KU, Mike McGurl said they had some soul-searching to do, and...
Still got some soul searching to do.
You know, they still got some soul searching to do. They've got a game coming up against TCU on Saturday. It's going to be their best shot at a win the rest of the year, aside from Iowa State, because it sounds like that game will get rescheduled now. According to Bruce Weber, he said that the first week of March, as long as everything goes as planned, that game probably will get rescheduled for the first week of March. But once you play TCU on the road, you finish with Oklahoma and West Virginia, and they're ranked 9th and 13th. I don't think you're going to beat either one of those teams. So if you can't get the win against TCU, I don't know. You know, of those two games, I don't think you're going to get a win either one of those places. And if that, you don't end up making up that Iowa State game, you're gonna get one Big 12 win on the year, and that's an ugly look. So not good. This might be their last shot at getting a regular season win, depending on what happens with the Iowa State game. So disappointed to see that, and we'll see if they can turn around and try to swing a win against TCU. Like I said, it may be their best shot left in the season.
Yeah, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, the Purple Project Podcast, rolling along, episode 45 of the podcast. Yeah, you're right. You're spot on. TCU, yeah, this is probably going to be the last chance. And TCU, 4-6 in the conference play. They're 11-8. And remember going back to the first meeting against TCU, K-State played TCU. Well, especially in the second half, obviously they went off to a slow start in the first half, if I recall, then woke up in the second half, and then TCU just made big plays, big shots later in the game. So, K-State, yeah, when you look at it on paper, Alex, yeah, you're spot on. TCU, this is it. Now, you brought up the possibility of them rescheduling Iowa State, so that's a good possibility for a win there. But, yeah, you're looking at the very least, two wins. Worst case scenario, well, that's best case scenario, two wins. Well, actually, if you get TCU, let's just say they get TCU in Iowa State, best case scenario to get three. And now you get the worst case scenario where you lose to TCU. And if you get this game rescheduled with Iowa State, if you somehow mess around with Iowa State, kind of blow the pooch, if I will. Then you're only going to, worst case scenario, you stay with one win. And yeah, that's an ugly, ugly, ugly look for going into the offseason there. And yeah, OU.
I would assume that would be really devastating if your last game of the year you lost to a winless Iowa State team. I just don't think that would be a good ending to the year. They would go to Kansas City. They'd go play a Big 12 tournament game.
Then they'd
come home. But you get my point. That would be a tough way to end the season. And look, Robbie Hummel, he touched on it in the broadcast today. He said, you know, there's positives for K-State if they can bring this core back. Nigel Pack.
That's the key. Tony That's the key.
Gordon, Selton Miguel, Dejuan Gordon. If you can bring this group back next year, there's positives. You can, you know, this can turn into something. He said the biggest issues K-State's going to have is bringing them all back because of how bad they've been this year. He's 100% correct. I think there is a future with K-State, with this group at K-State. I think they can be a good Big 12 basketball team in years to come. But can that group stay together? That's my biggest fear. When you're this bad, there's transfers. Guys don't, you usually just don't bring a whole team back after you have a season like this.
So
my concern is, what do you do if Nigel Pack ends up transferring out, or Dejon Gordon ends up transferring out, or Selton Miguel ends up transferring out, or two of the guys transfer out? Then, as Robbie Hummel put it, you're in a pretty bad spot if you're K-State. And that's really what they're fighting against more than anything, is trying not to lose guys to this offseason. So, man, if they could find a way to get feel good to end the season so they could at least get that core back, it's important. It could be important to the future of them, because if they lose some of these guys and they got to start rebuilding from scratch again, I don't see how that benefits anyone. I don't see how it benefits K-State.
I don't see how it benefits
Bruce Weber. I don't see how it benefits the fans, the players. I don't see anyone who benefits from that. So I think that's the thing we need to begin to talk about is, you know, can they hold this group together?
That's not good. You have to do that. You lose, here we go with that word again, that transfer portal again, like we talked about in football season last year. This is going to be critical. The next few games, well, after the season, is going to be the big question mark. And this has been the rumblings here in Manhattan about, you know, bad fans about basketball. I mean, the donors and everything else, you know, starting to get restless. And you lose a couple of these freshmen, especially in Nigel Pack, a lot of his name has been floating around a ton.
That would probably get Bruce fired. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. The way Nigel Pack's played this year, he's probably going to be on the Big 12 all freshman team. If he ended up transferring out, I don't know how Bruce would survive. I know Gene has said all this stuff that he said, but if Nigel Pack, who is their best player and is a freshman, transfers out after that, I don't know how Bruce saves his job. I really don't. I've heard that too. And the first thought that comes to my mind is, how do you keep him? How do you keep him if he loses his best player as a freshman? I just don't see how they do that. So if you're Bruce Weber, you're doing everything in your damn power to make sure Nigel Pack does not leave. I mean, Selton Miguel, don't want it, but okay. Nigel Pack is one guy that they cannot have leave. I don't see how Bruce survives it, and I don't see how K-State has even a fighter's chance next year without him.
Yeah, and we see kind of a difference, and I'm going to use Baylor as an example. You know, well, obviously they kept their core players together. Now, they've had some additional here and there, but you know, Baylor, they're bad. Or at least not this bad, but Baylor, all of a sudden they're growing, and then look at them. You know, they're undefeated. They're dealing with the COVID issues right now, still dealing with the COVID issues. But aside from that point, they're pretty damn good. So this is what K-State has a chance to be. Obviously, we've won two Big 12 titles. We've seen the Big 3 coming here a couple years ago with Dean and Barry and Cam, right? So, you know, this team right here that we're looking at, Alex, Nigel Pack, Selton Miguel, Davion Bradford. Now, Bradford's been inconsistent, in my opinion, with all the size that he's got. He has a chance to dominate.
Definitely got flashes that he can get, you know, can figure the consistency thing out.
Yeah, exactly. And they have some pieces off the bench. Siri Lewis, we've seen Easy Yegu, who's been good off of injury. He struggled tonight with only 3 points, but given a good minutes off the bench. So we talked about Dejuan Gordon here and there in the podcast, had a good game, and now off the bench. That's what you need to bring in the starter's role for inconsistent Dejuan Gordon. We've seen inconsistency from him too. Antonio Gordon, like you mentioned, with double-double. In Stillwater had a bad game tonight. So if you bring, let's focus on Pat, Miguel, and Bradford. And then, of course, Luke, you can bring him back also. This is really going to be, people are going to have to pay attention to what happens after the Big 12 tournament. Well, obviously, K-State's not going to have no chance, but after that one game, so it's going to be critical. I mean, you lose him, Pat, yeah, Bruce Weber can walk himself out the door. And then you lose two, they are really in trouble. And fans here, they don't want to see this revolving door of, you know, 1 year, okay, we're in a rebuilding mode, and then all of a sudden we got to go back to rebuilding mode. We don't want to see that. We want to see this. We want to see growth, and this is going to be a telltale sign of these players. I mean, all of this transfer portal and whatnot. You don't want to be with a bad team. You want to go somewhere that you want to win, right?
Yep.
So this is going to be very, very important here. I mean, all four games aside, that includes the Iowa State rescheduled game here, and that doesn't even count the one game that K-State's going to get in Kansas City. But yeah, that's going to be critical for them to keep these players. I mean, obviously, we talked about these core players even before the season started, about how good this K-State team could possibly get back to being that we're used to seeing a few years ago, contending for Big 12 championship. So
yeah, and then just quickly, these last two recruiting classes were Bruce Weber's best two recruiting classes since he got to K-State. Like, these aren't, you know, just some scrubs that are out there. You know, Daniel Bradford, he's a four-star. You look at four-star recruit. You look at Nigel Pack, he's a four-star recruit. I believe Selton McGill was a three-star recruit. He was a high three-star recruit. He was still a top 150, I think. I think he was top 150. He was still a pretty highly talented recruit. And so you got three good recruits there that still have a lot of potential. I think Nigel Pack's already proved. I think we all know that he's got a chance to be a star for K-State if he can play three, four seasons here. And you look at Selton McGill, you see the flashes. You look at Daniel Bradford, you see the flashes. We talked about last year's recruiting class, Eddie, and we said, guys, someone needs to step up within that core of Montavious Murphy, Antonio Gordon, Dejuan Gordon. Someone's got to step up. Someone has to take the next step. Well, obviously, Montavious Murphy hasn't. And if you're a K-State fan, I don't think you should bank on him having an impact on the team. I think that ship, to be 100% honest, when you look at the injuries, I think that ship's kind of sailed. But you look at Dejuan Gordon and Antonio Gordon, I do believe that they're better players. And I do believe that they've showed this year we've got the potential to be really good. And Dejuan Gordon has had a lot of flashes of that. Antonio Gordon has definitely had some flashes that he never showed last year as well. So, like, those two guys have taken steps, even though they're still inconsistent. They've taken steps and showed we can be really good players, which shows me that they still can be the players we expected them to be. And that's five guys right there that you still believe can achieve what you thought that they could when you recruited them to K-State. You throw in guys like you mentioned, Zaire Lewis, Ezeagu, Luke Kazuki, who, let's just be honest, we're not going to know the games this year with Luke Kazuki because he was hurt most of the year. He didn't get any practice time. He's just kind of thrown in the fire. And so, you can't judge what he's doing this year. So, you know, he was another guy that was a good recruit for K-State. So, it's just really hard to, and it was Carlton Lingard. I think Carlton Lingard has a future, possibly, at K-State as well. He's just kind of gotten, you know, buried in the depth chart for a handful of reasons. So, there's guys there, Eddie, that you still think, man, we can build this team around. And you mentioned Baylor. You look back and you mentioned Canberry and Dean their freshman year when they didn't even make the NIT.
Yep.
And I believe it. And I believe they went 5-13 in Big 12 play, which is better than this, but still, it was 5-13. But look, they grew and they got there. And yes, you have to fill your roster out some more with recruits over the years, but it's there. And I still think that there is hope for the basketball team in the years to come. This doesn't really dilute what I see in future seasons. It just makes me think this season's going really, really bad. And I want to see them have a full off season together.
Yep, that's
and a whole program, and then let's come back and let's get a better gauge of them in a season that I think that they can be a lot more competitive next year. But if we can't see them, then what's the point? And if you're a fan, you heard this whole spiel last year about, well, you know, we're rebuilding, and K-State have had a season that was much worse than was expected, even though they were rebuilding. And then they ended up getting rid of a lot more guys than was expected. There was more turnover on the roster than was expected coming into this year, which is why you don't have the leadership this year, which is probably why you're not as good this year. If you lose guys and you have to rebuild again, fans get sick of that. Fans don't just keep doing that, you know? So you're right. That whole spiel is it's old with fans at this point. And when you've won four Big 12 games the last 2 years, that's just like I said, that's not going to fly very well. And so if you're K-State, you can't sell to the fans, well, you know, we're going to recruit some new guys. We're going to rebuild this again. That's not a sell that I don't think anyone's going to buy right now. So, man, like I said, Robbie Hummel, he hit it on the head during the broadcast. Their biggest challenge is bringing the guys back. If they can bring them back, they got a shot. But they got to bring them back. I mean, they got to find a way to bring them back, and that's concerned. I'm worried about it. I'll be honest, I really am, because I don't think that K-State expected this, and it's easier to transfer now than it ever has been. So with the transfer portal, so yeah. It's not comforting. But you're right. We're just gonna have to keep a close eye out there and see what happens.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
That will be the key, that is for sure. So tonight, K-State men's basketball lose to KU and get swept in a Dillon Sunflower Showdown tonight, 59-41. Kansas came into this game ranked 23rd in the nation. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, a couple of K-State alums / Wildcat 91.9 alums as well. This is the Purple Project Podcast. Alright, so now to the other half of the basketball spectrum with the women. K-State finally got off the goose egg over the weekend, beating KU and handily before holding him off late there with a big game from Ioka Lee. And then same thing here early this afternoon. Ioka Lee, big game from her again, which has been the theme of the year for this K-State women's basketball team. But this time, Oklahoma State on the road lose to them by 13-59-46 in this game. And K-State women now only 1-12 in conference play, and they did it again this time. I mean, over the weekend, they did not have Cindy Goodson and Chrissy Carr. They did not have those two again for this one earlier this afternoon. And other than Lee, back the KU game, they had a girl step up. Simone Goodrich, Rachel Ranke had 17 points. Emily Ebert scored a career high 15 against KU over the weekend. But here, this afternoon, you get nothing. That's been a theme of the podcast tonight. No other.
That's the theme of the season.
Yeah, no other lady did not get double digits here in this one. Ioka Lee, 12-19 from the field in this one. 7 rebounds for her in the game, 2 blocks, 27 points in this one, and it's just not going to cut it. I mean, we said it all. I mean, they were getting the scores. They were getting help outside of Lee for the last really several games, but when you're getting this type of production, and Rachel Ranke, surprisingly enough, I mean, I expect a little more from her since she's been with the team for 3 years now. So I expect a lot more from her, and only 3 points. You go 1-8 from downtown, that's not going to cut it. That's pretty much over half the threes that K-State took in this one. 1-14 from downtown. Only 30% for K-State today from the field. 17-55 today. And it cut the turnovers down to 13, but still, though, you get outscored. You start off slow in the first half. The game is just not going to cut it. They kept it close, particularly in the second half of the game. K-State tried to make a run late in the fourth quarter. And just like the Mayu, you can't fall behind too much. It is too much ground to make up. And it's really the surprising part of the season is, you know, before Goodson and Carr even weren't even available, when they're in the, when they were both in the starting lineup, they still kind of were struggling a little bit. So Lee, the bright spot for this team all year, all season long, and K-State back to losing ways after needing that win at KU. Let's face it, they needed to beat KU, and they did that. But here on the road, too much to ask against the Cowgirls of Oklahoma State in a 59-46 loss in K-State. Now, I'll look forward to the next opponent. I don't have the schedule in front of me right now, but it's a learning growing pains once again for this team, Alex, that was expected. And don't want to sound like a repeating horse, but you keep saying this over and over this podcast. They're picked top half of the league, unlike the men were, and they're going to have to go back to the drawing board in the offseason.
Yeah, that is the difference. That is the difference between the two. K-State and men's, they were picked to finish last coming into the year. The women were not picked to finish last coming into the year. They were, as you mentioned, top half. That next game is against Texas on the road, by the way, who Texas is currently 14-6 and 8-5 in Big 12 play. So K-State's got their work cut out for them in that game against Texas. But, first I'm going to just loop back quickly to their game that they had against KU and give them credit, for finally getting into the win column. We said last week on the podcast, they have got to find a way to just beat KU. And I know we said that last time they played KU too, in Lawrence. But they found a way. They found a way to get this one. Now, KU outscored K-State by 10 in the second half. So K-State still did get outscored pretty significantly in the second half. But the good news was they had built up, going into halftime, it looks like a 39-18 lead at halftime. So they were able to absorb what's, I apologize, Eddie, my cat just dropped her toy at my feet, so I had to throw it for her. It's like a dog. She plays fetch like a dog. I don't understand it. Guess you didn't play fetch. But no, they were able to withstand that because they got such a big lead. And they took a lead, 28 points, 13-22 from the field. Just playing great basketball for K-State out there. And, Ebert adds on 15, Ranky adds on 17, Mackey gives you a 9, Booters and Jay. I mean, you're able to get a little bit of help, but then, so kudos to them. Kudos to someone beating KU and being able to get that win and get off the schneid, essentially, get the first Big 12 win that they needed so bad. And they lose this game to Oklahoma State. But once again, Ayuka Lee has another really good game. She seems to really be the bright spot for K-State. 27 points, 12-19 from the field. They were talking about her during the men's broadcast today. Just to tell you kind of what games get a little boring, so let's talk about the women's team.
Yep.
Ayuka Lee and what she's doing. Because she obviously was doing good, but, the Oklahoma State game, it was a game that K-State was never really had a shot in. I mean, they got down 7 after the first. Going into halftime, they were down by about 13 or 12 or 13. I don't know. It was double digits. They were down by double digits going into half. And it just was too much for them to I think it was 13. It was just too much. Especially against a team like Oklahoma State, who's 12-4 in conference play. On the road. Yeah, that's just, once again, we talked about the men's team, you put yourself in too big of a hole on the road. The women's team just did. I mean, there's no way they could dig themselves out. You hold Oklahoma State 24 points in the second half, but you just put yourself in too big of a hole. K-State did not get the scoring help that they needed against Oklahoma State. I mean, because Aoki Lee has 27 points, but then your next highest scorer has 5. So that's no way to win a basketball game. and no, this is not going to cut it. So, you know, I'm definitely happy that they got to win Saturday. Definitely think that they should get their love for that because they needed it. They needed to get on the board. They did it against KU. Aoki Lee Vaughn, she deserves the credit for the way that she's playing, combining for, 50 points in her last two games? Or not 50, 45 points? I'm not good with math, Eddie. Maybe 55 points? No, 55 points. There we go. I think 28 plus 27 is 55. And, wow, that's pretty bad that I could box that at the beginning. But 55 points in the last two games is, she obviously deserves credit for that, but the inconsistency continues from them. And, Oklahoma State's a really good team. Never thought K-State really had a shot going in there, but you still would like to see more than 46 points. Kind of like Vince's team, you would like to see more than 41 points. It would have been nice today if the team could have cracked 50. That would have been nice. I don't want to get asked too much. If you would have said, Eddie, going into tonight, K-State men's and women's were going to hold their opponents under 60 points, you would have thought at least one of them would have won. But neither one. They both lost. And, for K-State, it's on to Texas. And I just mentioned it. Texas having a good season. It's going to be tough for them. So, we'll see if they can go and can hang with them. But I would assume that the Texas game is going to be an uphill battle for K-State. And their next shot, in my opinion, at having a realistic shot at snagging a win is coming home against Texas Tech on the 24th. Texas Tech 4-11 in conference play. They're 9-12 in the season. I think that's a game that you can win. The good news for K-State is they still have a couple winnable games because they also have TCU on the schedule still. And TCU's 3-10 on the season in Big 12 play, 8-10 overall. And that's a game that you could probably snag if you play well. And you have Oklahoma on the schedule still, and they're 5-7 in Big 12 play and 8-9 overall. So unlike the men's team, there's still some games out there for K-State to have. On the women's team. I still can see realistically at least 2-3, if things go well, maybe even 4 wins for them, but most likely 2 or 3. But there's still some wins out there for them. So, you know, they just need to keep chugging away and see if they can try to salvage, the season in some way, shape, or form, give them a little bit of confidence going into next year. We know postseason plays out the window, but anything that can give them a little confidence going into the offseason. And we talked about the K-State men's team not losing players. Same thing with the women. I'm not saying that the women are going to lose any players, but it'd be nice to be able to get some wins on the back half of that or the back stretch to make sure that you have some of these young players. The women's team has, and make sure that they're coming back, and they don't leave. So, because for them, Eddie, these are players that were legit expecting to play for an NCAA tournament berth, and to play in the NCAA tournament, and to compete in the Big 12. And that can make it even more difficult, and sometimes that can even lead to more transfers than when you're predicted to just think. So, same thing for them. I think it would be good if they get some more wins, get feeling better about themselves, try to get a little momentum, and keep that core happy, feeling good into the off season. Because I do think that there's some things that they can build on as well. So, but yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle for them, I think, going into Austin over the weekend, and I think that they're going to have to regroup against Texas Tech at home. Likely, if they can find a way to beat Texas on the road, that's great. But I hold my breath. But still. Aoki Lee has played so well. I'll end my spot on giving her credit for great play. K-State needs it. So hopefully she can continue to play at a really high level and put up 20+4.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
As Alex mentioned, yep, the women's next game now in Austin on Saturday or Sunday, 21st, 23rd. I think that's a Sunday game. Not 100% sure. That's on the Longhorn Network for K-State ladies basketball. So, and then you have the Texas Tech next Wednesday, if my calendar memory is correct on that. So, two games, and then of course a tough stretch there. Texas, then you got Tech, and then you have Baylor. Three Texas teams right there. And then not only that, you gotta host TCU. That's another Texas team. Then West Virginia, and then you end the year with Oklahoma. And it's just a reminder, folks, that West Virginia and OU, those are makeup games there that were missed due to K-State getting the COVID. So we'll see what happens there with Texas. So, yep, K-State women having their issues as well as we move on into football here to kind of put a bow on this podcast, talking the schedule that came out, that was released last week. I believe it was last Thursday that this schedule was announced for K-State football, Alex. And when we look at this schedule here, and we're just going to, we've already talked about Stanford already. If you missed out on any of that good content, please go check out the Purple Project Podcast, latest episodes. You will find that in the last couple episodes of the podcast, us talking about the Stanford game and what it means. And this was supposed to be the home game that Stanford was supposed to come to Bill Snyder Family Stadium, but instead, due to what has happened with the pandemic and whatnot, this thing, the scenery switched from Manhattan to Arlington, Texas in Jerry World on September the 4th. Big game for K-State there. And then your next two games, Alex, non-con, Southern Illinois on the 11th of September. And then Nevada is interesting to me. Nevada's a pretty good team. And that's going to be an intriguing matchup with Nevada. And they're known for their offense coming in here on September 18th.
Yeah, you know, you look at the non-con, and, yeah, you're right. We talked about Stanford coming ad nauseum. And look, rightfully so. And I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about the Stanford game between now and September 4th, because that's a big-time game. Obviously a big-time game. You know, down in Jerry World, you're probably going to get a national stage and playing a good football team from the Pac-12. So that's won a lot of games in previous seasons, and so it's obviously going to be a great opportunity for K-State there. But you look at the other two non-conference games, and you know, Southern Illinois, that's a game that K-State shouldn't have much of an issue with. They've actually got a nice little basketball team. Fun fact, Eddie, I considered going to Southern Illinois for college. It was actually down to K-State, Southern Illinois. There were a couple other schools that I visited, but those were probably the two I was most serious about. So I know a couple of things about Southern Illinois, but I could not be separated from my purple, Eddie. I could not. I'm purple. I believe purple. I literally have a shirt that says I believe purple, because I do. So. Couldn't separate me from K-State. But yeah, Southern Illinois, their football team is, K-State should be fine, I would assume, with that game. The Nevada game is interesting, because you were correct. Nevada, that's a pretty good football team. That's a pretty good football team out west that wins a lot of games. You know, we talked about Stanford winning a lot of games out west. Nevada does the same thing. They don't play in the Pac-12, but they definitely had their success, and I'm not exactly sure how they're looking going into next season, but I know it's a good football program, and I know they win a lot, and they are really competitive. So I would assume that that's going to be a game that K-State's probably going to have to work for. That's a game that if K-State doesn't show up, they may lose it. So, but at the same time, I think that's a good thing, Eddie. I think it's a good thing to play a team like Nevada, a game that you probably should win. But at the same time, it's a game that could prepare you for Big 12 play. It's not just some cupcake team. You're playing a good, legit team. And if you get a win, it's something that strengthens your resume. You know, strengthens your resume when it comes down to bowl season. So, you know, I think that's a good one. And putting them third, I think that's the other thing. But not having Nevada, not opening the season against Nevada, your third game against Nevada, I don't think you want to open your season against a team like Nevada. There's not much to gain there. You win, you get the win, you lose, it looks bad, but Nevada's a team that can beat you. Kind of like the game we saw against North Dakota State in 2013.
Oh, boy.
There's really no reason K-State should ever play that game, first game of the season. You know, K-State would have beaten them, I'm sure, if that was the third game, and they were in sync, but they weren't. They weren't in sync. It was their first game. It was sloppy. We saw what happened this year in their first game. It wasn't pretty. They lost to Arkansas State. Wasn't it Arkansas State? I think that's who it was.
Yeah, Arkansas State. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it was Arkansas State. Arkansas State's not a bad football team. They ended up being a pretty good football team. But that's my point. That's what can happen if you play a team like that. So that's the risk of against Nevada. You risk having something like you did with Arkansas State happen. But I think having that as a third game, and already having played Stanford, I think K-State will be ready for that game and be more likely to be able to withstand any push that Nevada would send their way. So I look at this non-con, and I think it's going to be a difficult non-con. At the same time, I think if K-State can come out of it 3-0, they've got a really nice-looking resume, Eddie. So eager to kind of see the way it plays out.
Yeah, Nevada is pulling up their season from a year ago. They went 7-2 on the year, 6-2 in conference play there, and they're undefeated at home, and they're only 1-2 away. They had two neutral site games and won both of those as well. So, yeah, I mean,
They're good.
The only loss to
I see them, Eddie. I don't mean to cut you off, sir. I see them because San Diego State will play them. From time to time out here, and San Diego State's got a good football team too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Nevada. I've seen Nevada give San Diego State some fits. Really give them some fits. So that's a they're good. I mean, they're a legit team, and like I said, I'm not exactly sure how they'll look next year, but pretty much every year it seems like they're winning games and they're right in the thick of winning their conference, and I feel like I see them in bowls every single year.
Yeah, they beat San Diego State last year, 26-21. Their losses were to Hawaii and San Jose State. I don't know if you see much of San Jose State out there, Alex, but
I've not seen as much. I remember Nevada because Nevada had Colin Kaepernick, obviously, a while ago, and that's kind of what got Nevada on the radar, and then. Since then, it just seems like they're in the thick of things. You always see them on ESPN, on like the 10 p.m. broadcast Central Time. You know, it's like the 8 Pacific out here, but a game begins like 10 p.m. Central. It's always like, or it's like that Friday night game on ESPN that's always on, just that random Friday night college football game on the high school Friday night football. So that's typically where you see them, But no, they're a good team. It's interesting. Honestly, that was what made me raise my eyebrow like more than anything on the schedule, seeing Nevada in that third game. And, you know, maybe I just didn't take a hard enough look. They might have been on the schedule prior. They probably were. I probably just didn't realize it. But yeah, that was probably the biggest eyebrow raiser for me on that entire schedule.
Yeah, so that's the non-con right there. So interesting for Stanford in the open, Central Illinois in the middle, and then on the backside of that, Nevada. So you got a tough opponents right there. And then, of course, Big 12 play, you open on the road. Of course you do. Yeah. Of course we do. So we open, and you open up against Oklahoma State on the road in Stillwater, which I am contemplating on going to that game. Now, we're in the middle of February, so I think me and Kate have been talking about going down there for that game. We'll see what the capacity is and all that when we get to the fall. But Oklahoma State on our own Stillwater, that is going to be something there. And then you come back home to play the other Oklahoma team, of course, who we've knocked off the last two seasons in OU, Alex. That's an interesting start to the season.
Yeah, well, you know, it's difficult start for the season, that's sure.
once again, my first thought was, of course, K-State's opening on the road to begin the season, begin the Big 12 season. That's pretty typical. You look, and it's not just that they're opening up on the road. They're opening up, once again, against really good teams on the road. They're opening up on the road against Oklahoma State. And once again, that's one of the better teams in the Big 12. And then they're coming home and play Oklahoma. I mean, man, you're talking about, and I don't want to go too far, but I mean, if you look at the third game, that's Iowa State in the Big 12 as well. I mean, boy, I looked at that and I thought, you know, the schedule was really pretty back heavy this past year. It's going to be pretty front heavy going into this year because that has three tough games to open up. You very well could be looking possibly at an 0-3 start in Big 12 play if things don't break your way somewhere. And if you drop a game to Stanford or Nevada, you could very well possibly open up 2-4 on the season, 0-3 in Big 12 play. This is probably worst case scenario, but you get the gist of it, and you know it just puts more stress, honestly, on the non-conference when you look at those first three conference games. But you open it up on the road against Oklahoma State, that's obviously going to be difficult. I'm honestly not exactly sure who all's coming back for them this upcoming year, but either way, they competed for a Big 12 title. They're going to be tough. Oklahoma won the Big 12 title. They're obviously going to be tough. But hey, you know, K-State's beaten them 2 years in a row, so maybe they can make it three. I mean, you never know. You never know.
That's right. You never know. And then you brought Iowa State in, and we kind of talked about go off track here. Seven home games. Now the Stanford game was supposed to be a home game, so you were looking at eight. We kind of talked about this a little bit in the previous episodes of Triple P. So, but you still though Stanford technically going out of Texas is still a home game because you're gonna have all the support down there, all the alumni, K-State alumni down there, and in the Fort Worth area. We talked about that. So. A lot of home games here. You don't have, so you have seven other home games here. So again, you touch on Iowa State here in Manhattan on the 16th of October, which they re-signed Matt Campbell. Yeah, Matt Campbell, head coach for a long extension. Then you gotta go on the road on the 23rd of October with Tech. I don't know who they which way they're bringing, how many they're bringing back. And then kind of end the month here with TCU back at home. And TCU was up and down last year also. So after Iowa State with these next two games with Texas Tech and TCU, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, and I think that when you look past Iowa State, the schedule really lightens up for K-State, beginning, as you mentioned, with Texas Tech and TCU. We don't know exactly what Texas Tech will look like, but I think it's going to be a winnable game. I really do. I think K-State's a better football team. I think K-State will be the better football team next year. Like I said, I don't know Texas Tech's schedule, team in and out next year, but you know, I know what K-State is gonna look like, and I know that Texas Tech. I don't recall any young freshmen that were just like, oh my gosh, like that guy just may go off next year on their team. So, I mean, I think that's going to be a winnable game for K-State. TCU at home, I think that's going to be a winnable game for K-State. TCU is always a decent team, but, if Skyler has the sixth year with that crew, I think that K-State may has the firepower to be able to compete with them. So, yeah, I look at those as two winnable games after a really difficult three-game stretch to open up the season. And this is kind of taking a sidetrack before we go into those last four games, Eddie. But one other little note about this schedule I thought was interesting. K-State, two notes, actually. Number one, I only have one bye week in a whole schedule. And people remember this last year. Granted, it was COVID season. But K-State had, three byes in their 10-game schedule. And,
Now we're going back to the 12-game schedule. You're going to just have one bye all season long. But K-State doesn't have back-to-back road games this season at all. They do not have back-to-back road games anywhere on the schedule, but they do have back-to-back home games three different times on the schedule. So I think that's a big deal. I mean, K-State doesn't have to double up on road games anytime in the schedule, and they're going to be able to stay home multiple weeks, multiple times this year. Just a little nugget that I think could possibly help them throughout the season.
Yeah, so, and we're going through this schedule not knowing how these teams are going to look, obviously, when we get to the fall and the course of the final four games in the month of November, start November 6th on the road against KU, and then which will still, they'll be, speaking of rebuilding that we talked about early in the podcast, Alex, I'm pretty sure KU will still be rebuilding, so on the road, Lawrence. Oh no,
it's enjoyable. It makes me not feel so bad about this horrible basketball season we're having. If KU just comes out and just continues to do what they do in football. Did they go 0-10 this last season in football? I think they went 0-10 this last year. I don't think they won a game.
Yeah, they went this last year. They went 0-10, yeah.
Yeah, so if they want to just keep, or maybe they might have been 0-9, the last game might get canceled. Either way, they didn't win. But yeah, so I hope they're rebuilding, Eddie. I hope that that's a win for K-State, because that's gonna stink. It's gonna be a kick in the kahunas if they can't get that game there in Lawrence. But it's gonna be interesting if our fans going to be able to go, which I bet they will by November 6th. And if they are you going to see a scene in Lawrence like you did a few years ago? When that stadium was, KU was bragging about their first sellout in 20 million years, and half the stadium was purple. The reason you sold that game out is because K-State fans came in droves and took over your stadium. So,
yep.
I'd love to see that again.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully we can do that again when November comes. And then, of course, the last two home games, November 13th and November 20th, and can we solve the riddle of West Virginia, Alex? The November 13th, and then you got Baylor coming in here on November 20th here for the last game of the home schedule for K-State here in Manhattan, Kansas. But back to West Virginia, Alex. Neil Brown has, we talked about this late last year, and we brought it up. Neil Brown has Chris Klieman's number so far in this battle of, so, quote-unquote, new coaches. Going back a couple years ago, K-State was a better team here in Manhattan, bringing West Virginia, and they fumbled the ball on West Virginia. So, can they, and I don't know how much they're bringing back, obviously, we're doing this in mid-February, but West Virginia has been a thorn in the side of the Wildcats.
You're right about Neil Brown's just flat out coached Chris Klieman 2 years in a row. Just flat out now coached him a couple years in a row. And which is kind of odd. Because you look at Oklahoma and you kind of feel like Chris Klieman's out coached Lincoln Riley 2 games in a row. But then you turn around and you see Neil Brown out coaching Coach Klieman 2 years in a row, those same 2 years. So kind of odd the way he's kind of got his number. My God, he's kind of got their number a little bit, his number a little bit too. But I didn't feel like he really got outcoached this last season against Oklahoma State. More than anything, I just felt that K-State's made a bunch of mistakes offensively late in that game. But yeah, West Virginia's definitely been the team that's been difficult for Coach Klieman to crack. And they seem to play their best against K-State. They seem to come up with schemes and looks that K-State's not ready for. And I don't know. I hope they can crack it. I look at the schedule, and I think if K-State wants to be a really good team this year, that's a game that you win right there at home against West Virginia. But it's hard for me to give K-State the edge against West Virginia just the way West Virginia has fooled them the first 2 years of the Klieman era. I kind of am to the point where I feel like I kind of need to see it to believe it at this point. And, hopefully we do see it this year.
Oh, but that's going to be an interesting one. That's probably one of the more intriguing Big 12 games because of that narrative. And you look at it, you kind of feel like K-State's a better football team. They definitely were the better football team a couple years ago. This year going in, I felt like K-State was a better team. Looking back on it now, West Virginia probably was better than K-State, but I don't think there was a huge gap, especially if Skylar's healthy. I think the K-State might have been right there with West Virginia, but I mean, West Virginia has made Chris Kyle look silly when they play in Morgantown. So I think it's intriguing for that particular narrative, because if West Virginia comes in and they do something like that to K-State again, well, then Chris Kleiman, you know, that's going to be something that we need to talk about as a legit concern and a legit worry if we just see something like that happen third year in a row. So, you know, unless West Virginia is like undefeated and they're just like playing crazy and K-State's having a bad season, and then it's a little different. But I'm assuming K-State's having a good competitive season. That's a game that K-State might have a little bit of pressure on their back, a little pressure because they know it. They know West Virginia's had him the last couple of years. They know Neil Brown's had him. Coach Kleiman knows it. He knows that Neil Brown's kind of gotten him. So, and that's going to be an interesting one.
And then lastly, not least, of course, like this past year when K-State had Texas here and Texas just was put it on K-State, we're going back to Texas, back to Austin to cap off the 2021 season later on this fall at Texas on November 27th. And the last time we're in Austin for that game, of course, K-State lost in heartbreaking fashion then. And then this year, even though K-State offense finally woke up, the defense slacked off. They went to sleep against and obviously that's going to be against Steve Sarkisian. They're putting it into his first year as head coach at Texas, but Texas, they're interesting. They're very interesting. So that's always a good matchup there. And I'm actually with the guys that we're bringing back that we talked about last week on the podcast, Alex. And then obviously the transfers that are coming in here, and obviously the new guys that are on this football team here with the spring ball here coming out right around the corner, Alex, which we'll talk about next week. K-State, you know, they have a chance here to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. You know, you look at Texas. You look at that. Just quickly run that schedule out. You look at the Baylor and Texas. I look at Baylor. I think K-State should win that game. To be honest, just quickly touching on that one. I believe that they Charlie Brewer entered himself into the transfer portal, and he was probably the best player. Quarterback anyway, and so I don't know how their season will go. I think they may have a bit of an uphill battle this year as well, but I guess we'll just see. But I do think that's favorable for K-State. The Texas game is interesting because you mentioned it. You know, Texas was not pretty. It was not a pretty game against Texas this last year, and that happened. And the year before, K-State did play it pretty well. Texas just got them. Texas just got them at the end of it. That was a game that I didn't watch that whole game because I was actually at Nashville at the time. But I did catch parts of it and did catch highlights. And to me, it didn't feel like K-State played that bad. It really just felt like Texas played you know, really good. And it feels like Texas has played K-State really well the last couple seasons. So you know, that's going to be a tough one going down to Austin to end the season. And it's a lot of it. You've heard me mention this before. A lot of it very well may depend on where Texas is. You know, if they're competing for something, you may see a really difficult Texas team. If they're not competing for much, you may not. But this last year I said that, and Texas came out and dropped 69. Okay, say. So who knows what we'll see from that game. But you're right. You know, you look at K-State, and they do. You know, all in all, you look at the schedule, you look at the team. They do have something to work with. They can do something here. And it's way too early to predict what's going to happen, obviously, because we still don't know what exactly the roster is going to look like. I think we have a pretty good idea at this point, but we're still in the process of going through that. I think that you wait till probably spring ball to know kind of what you're expecting your roster to kind of look like a little bit. And mm-hmm. so You know, you're not quite there yet. But I look at them, and I mentioned it before. You know, with Skylar going back, with Deuce in the second year, hopefully another running back emerges that can help Deuce. And then some of the guys that are coming back, some of the transfers. I do think they have the chance to be a 7-8 win team again and have a season more in line with Chris Clement's first year here than the second year here. I think that there's the possibility of that. I don't know really how much they can do beyond winning eight-ish games. I think that might be the ceiling for them. But once again, it's way too early to really tell. We're going to have to see how they look in spring ball. We're going to have to see exactly how that roster looks. We're going to see how things kind of come together. We're going to have to see how the Big 12 looks. Who knows? I mean, we're going to have to see how strong is the league. Is it going to be a strong year? Is it going to be a weak year? How good Stanford and Nevada can end up being? I don't think we know quite yet how good those two teams will be. That could play a big role in it as well. So, but I definitely think there's pieces in place for K-State to revert back to more of what we saw that first year with Coach Kleiman, and that second year when they did go 8-4, lost the bowl game, and finished 8-5, but 8-4 in the regular season. And you hope that you can see that, because when the season ended, I did not feel that way. When some of the guys were transferring out, there was a lot of question marks. I said, oh man, K-State may not be able to get bowl eligible next year. Because this roster just may not have the depth and the talent to do it. But it does seem like they're building that depth back up better than I thought that they would. They've had more guys stay than I expected. They've had some good transfers come in that I think can make immediate impact. So I do think that they have the pieces to do that. Let's not forget, Eddie, just quickly to touch on this. Chris Kleiman's first year, that was not one of the more talented K-State football teams. That football team was not filled with talent. That was not a team that was just loaded with talent across the board. In fact, that team lacked a lot of talent. And they went 8-4 because Chris Kleiman coached his tail off. Coached their tails off. Coached his players' tails off. And he got them to buy in. And those two things elevated them to an 8-4 team, when in reality their talent level was probably closer to 6-6-ish. Well, that's part of what gives me confidence that he can do that again. You know, I look at this crew, and I don't know if this team will have more talent than that team or not, but I don't think this team will have less talent than that team we saw his first season. And if he can get them to 8 wins, and, you know, that first team, and he can build up the depth the way that he seems to be building it up for this upcoming season, I think that there's something there in place where they could revert back. And I think it's a higher likelihood with Skylar coming back. I know that he continues to repeat it, but Skylar going back for that sixth year, it's enormous. I mean, to have a leader like that, you know, leading your team, a sixth-year player at quarterback, I mean, you can't put a price on that type of experience. That doesn't mean Skylar's going to come out and just ball out. No, I'm not saying that. But you cannot put a price on that type of experience. And you can't deny the fact, looking at this past season, Eddie, that K-State was playing really good football before he got hurt. I mean, this was a K-State team that we legitimately thought had a shot of playing in the Big 12 title game.
Mm-hmm.
Their biggest problem was that Skylar collapsed and COVID got him in the back half of the season, and they lost some defensive players, and they ended up breaking down defensively. So, you know, I think there's still some pieces in place, but we're just going to have to see. As you mentioned, it's just so early, but the schedule breaks out for pretty well. I really do. I mentioned it. No back-to-back road games. You've got back-to-back home games 3 different times, and so on off your Coach Kleiman. You wish the season didn't open up the way it did in the Big 12. I think you wish you played a game at home instead of on the road. But look, you know, I think all in all, you'll take it. There's a lot of positives to glean from it. And I really think K-State could go on a run in the back half of that schedule and get hot at the most important time to get hot.
Yeah. So a lot more on that roster for episodes to come on the Purple Project Podcast. Well, I definitely want to save that good content for future episodes of Triple P down the road. The 2020 schedule of the football team came out like last week, and we're breaking it down, putting a bow on this discussion. So looking forward to revealing that roster as spring ball will get underway here in Manhattan, here in, I believe, either next week or the week after that. So definitely going to have to stay tuned to see who's going to be standing out in spring ball. Of course, there's going to be no spring games, so there's just going to be practices. So we'll definitely know who stands out, that's for sure. So I want to put a bow on that, and a lot more to come on the football side here at K-State. So folks, that's going to do it on this edition of the Purple Project Podcast. A good episode tonight, even though K-State basketball went 0-2 today. The ladies losing on the road in Stillwater, and of course K-State getting struggled against KU and getting swept by them here tonight on the podcast. So Alex, any last words for our K-State band before we sign off tonight?
Yeah, you know, for me, Eddie, tough game tonight. Just going to loop back to K-State men's to kind of put a bow on it. Men's basketball, tough night. You know, it was obviously a tough night to see them, you know, against KU and only put up 41 points against them. I think more what's frustrating is that you look at them, you're like, man, you held them to 59 points. That should get you a win. That should get you a win if you hold a team to 59 points. And if somebody would have said to you, Eddie, hey, I can guarantee you that K-State's going to hold KU to 59 points, or you can just take the bet and just see what happens. Like, you say, I want to hold the 59 every single time. Let's see if K-State can outscore them. Outscore 59 points. I mean, you know, you would have taken that point outcome. So K-State was good on defense, you know, and they've grown on the defensive end. And I think that's something that's encouraging, because the team does seem to be getting better on the defensive end. I think what's discouraging is seeing what they're doing offensively. Yeah, there's too much flow. Tim Fitzgerald tweeted, Bruce Weber and his coaching staff, they've done a great job at recruiting shooters. Now they just need to recruit shot makers. Pretty much. A lot of guys that can shoot, not a lot of guys that can make shots right now. So, you really would like to see more basketballs go through hoops these last couple weeks for them, and see them continue to grow on the defensive side. And it sucks to lose to KU, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, just let it go, you know. It sucks, but it's calloused out of it. Just don't speak of it again. Don't lose sleep over it. You know, I never expected them to win this game. I thought it would be more. It was a competitive game. It was a single digit most game, but I shouldn't say it wasn't competitive. The score is pretty misleading. But yeah, just if I'm your K-State fan, don't worry about it. We got bigger things to worry about than losing to KU. I really think that if you're K-State, your focus shifts now to what do we do to keep these guys, to keep this young core. And I'm probably going to sound like broken record over the next month saying that, but that really is the top priority for K-State at this point, is to keep guys on the roster, convince them to come back next year and help this basketball team, and then try to build on it and get a full off season in this program, practices, time, and then see how the cookie crumbles next year. I just think that's where the attention shifts. I guess just final thought for anybody who's out there, you know, who's in this Arctic blast, you know, stay safe and, you know, just try to get through best you can. And, you know, just warm up this weekend, Eddie, so hopefully people can begin to get warm over the weekend. But I just hope people stay safe. I hope people are out in the Midwest and out in the South and Southeast and that entire region, you know, can stay safe during this crazy, crazy winter storm that's been going on for like a week now. So, that's obviously, there's some things that are more important than sports, and there's a lot of people that are struggling right now during this winter storm. So You know, that's obviously the top priority over anything going on right now. So hopefully those people stay safe. But hopefully sports can help people who are struggling, you know. And I think that you and I agree that sports is a great outlet for some of the crappy stuff going on in the world. I know it helped you and I have a lot during COVID. So hopefully listening to this podcast can take people's minds off of the sub-zero temperatures for an hour and a half. Although the temperatures may be coming up when they're listening to it, but you know, maybe you can take their mind off what's going on a little bit, and you know, look forward to what's going on in K-State sports and K-State football. You know, get excited. Schedule's out, Eddie. It's looking good. Stanford, Nevada. Yeah, I just feel like I sound like Dickie V right now, but hey. And, you know, I'm pumped. You know, I'm ready for football, man. Maybe it's because K-State basketball is just so bad right now. I'm just like, bring me baseball, bring me football. I bet you're ready for baseball. I bet you're ready for Braves baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I am definitely, yeah, for sure. Yep. Yes, sir. Ready for that. And NASCAR just got going recently as well.
Yeah, it did. It just got going over the weekend. There was a pretty intense finish to the race. We'll probably hear about that on your NASCAR podcast, though. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. That's right. The 3-Wide NASCAR podcast with EG3 coming out later on this week. So, yep, you're going to be hearing a lot of that. So, if you guys, any K-State fam in a NASCAR, the 3-Wide NASCAR podcast with EG3, stay tuned for that. Got some new episodes cooking up for y'all. So, yep, we'll be talking about that and getting ready for the workhorse down there at Daytona as well. So, a lot going on in my camp. And, yeah, definitely be thinking about those that are affected by this cold weather throughout the weekend. Please keep them in their thoughts and prayers during this time as well. And, of course, K-State basketball continues, men against TCU over the weekend as well. So, man, it'll be interesting for sure. Alex, we'll talk again next week, sir.
I look forward to it, man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap things up for another edition of the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer. That's me and Alex Aiden, my co-host. Again, remember, the Purple Project Podcast, get it. Wherever you download your podcast, y'all know what to do there. Until then, next week, go Cats. We will talk to you again. This has been another edition of the Purple Project Podcast.
On the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.